hearing, thank you. We're now up to day 11. We have the representatives of the Gordon Family Trust with us. Councillor, would you care to tell us how you propose to address the case? You have, I think, an hour and a half.
Oh, it is an hour and a half, is it? Because I wasn't clear. We were told to appear at 9:30, but that came from our instructing solicitor, so I've now discovered it's 10, so...
You can't trust the instructing solicitor. I'm sure you must have realised that by now.
John Hardy is my name. Hello. Members of the panel commissioners. I'm a barrister from Christchurch. On this originally was Graham Todd. Graham Todd, that's for Mr. Dippy. That's Willowbridge. He had a conflict, and so it's ended up in my hands.
So welcome to this happy gathering.
Thank you very much. Can I just tell you, an hour and a half, I'm going to try to make, definitely stay within the hour and a half if I've got it. I was told that I might now only have an hour, but this is how I propose to run it. We have three issues for you. The first, I think, I'm going to call the simple issue, and that is the question of whether some land ought to be zoned low density or medium density, and that issue is going to be dealt with by Duncan White on my left, whom you all know, and that is an issue where the council agrees, has changed its position. There's no other party opposing that. I have to say, from a resource management point of view, it just seems logical, no legal submissions, and he'll talk briefly to that and might have some questions, but I'll tell you what I'm going to imagine that in his explanation to you in the summary of his evidence and your questions, no more than 15 minutes it will take, I think, on this. The second and the only other real issue we have, that's the big issue, is effectively about our local shopping centre, which in my submissions I changed from a local shopping centre to an LCS, which is because I'm dyslexic, but that's the real issue, and that has got four components to it. I'm going to call it five actually because it subsumes another issue in amongst it. The first of those is the size of the zone itself. And the difference between the parties is now this, and I might say this is a difference only between the position of the council and the position of the trust that I represent. When this plan was notified, the council's section 32 analysis determined that an area of 2.7 hectares would be appropriate. It's an irregular lot size, so it's not a perfect place to develop land for commercial purposes, but 2.7 hectares. Mr. Dippy, through Willowbridge, three parts, call it what you want, put a submission in, being concerned about a certain aspect of it. He didn't want that local shopping centre competing with his larger format. Fair enough. Don't have a problem with any of that. So he talked about the way this should be dealt with is that, and I'll take you to it, but the submission from Willowbridge is that it should be that the tenancies were restricted to a particular square meterage. 400 was the figure that quite detailed and lengthy submission that Willowbridge put in suggested. Now, I don't know what went wrong. I don't know what went wrong, and I hope a councillor sitting on the panel today as a commissioner doesn't mind me saying this, and I hope council officers don't mind me saying it, but something kind of changed pretty dramatically. In part, it was because the council got Mr. Heath involved. He must have been involved before him, I think, which doesn't follow. I had to have done the section 32 analysis before. What's happened is the council has changed its position and gone from 2.7 hectares down to 0.7 of a hectare. And yes, I think there's jurisdiction to look at the size, and it came not from one party, Willowbridge, but it came from a neighbour who said, oh, this seems a bit too large. And so I think there is jurisdiction for them to look at. Yep, they did. Just can't understand where they got from. 2.7 down to 0.7. But that is a contest essentially between two experts on my right, John Polkinghorne, and council's expert, Mr. Heath. Now, that's really the nub of what I'm here to talk about. And I'm going to talk about through the evidence. I'll just ask you to contemplate as you listen to the evidence, and I'll talk to it briefly afterwards. There are four components of this. First of all, there's the size, 2.7 down to 0.7 of a hectare. The next is, out of the blue, the council decided on a rule to produce an overall cap to the size of the retail area, 3,000 square metres. Now, that didn't come from any submission, and I'm going to talk to you about that, and what that means legally. But the council's put a rule on the plan that it's non-complying if you want to exceed that. So, I mean, that's a, well, you, Mr. Chair, you know what new planners here know what non-complying means. So do you, councillor. I mean, you've got to have a really good case to get anything beyond that. You just shouldn't be using that phrase, non-complying, unless it's the right phrase. So they did that. So that's the second thing. They started to narrow it down. The third thing they did was, yes, they picked up on the Willow Ridge concept of a tenancy size, but it didn't even take the 400. They narrowed it down to 300. 300 square metres for retail, and then they added in 200 out of the blue for office space. And so those are the components that we will be looking at, but I have to say this by way of opening, that primarily the evidence of Mr. Polkinghorne is that you have a problem in Wanaka. You have growth that's extraordinary. He's done the hard yards, we say, the only person who has. He's looked out to the years ahead. I don't think he's looked out far enough, but that's by the by. The evidence is what it is. It's extraordinary, and you are short of commercial space. You have a town centre which is quite distinct. It's at the boundaries, roughly where it can go. And in this process, you're not providing really anywhere I could find room for an enormous expansion of your town centre. But you do have three parks just about to really get off the ground, just about to motor big box stuff, and it will drag in smaller stuff around the big box stuff. That's big. It's got a bit of a cap on it too. That was done in 2009, and they put a bit of a cap on that, but it can expand further. And of course, if you were back now visiting what you did by way of caps in 2009, our evidence will say they were pointless. That needs to really expand out and be able to grow. I mean, we've got our centre, which is, of course, a local shopping centre. That's a bigger size one. But the fact of the matter is all of those put together in the foreseeable future don't meet the needs of your community. And yet we're going to be arguing as to why it is that this was so constrained after the submissions were identified, that the plan was put out to the public. The council has come back and really put the lid on this, and we say it isn't justified. Actually, I'm not going to have some submissions at the end to say, I don't even think there's jurisdiction to do some of what they do. Now, the very last point I'm going to mention to you, but we're not calling evidence on, is that some neighbours to the shopping centre were complaining about the boundary. And they put in evidence to say that they wanted a better boundary between their low residential area and this new to be area set aside for a local shopping centre. The council's response to that through its own experts was to say, well, you needn't worry about that because we're not going to give them 2.7 hectares. And we're going to make sure it doesn't go to the boundaries of your properties in any event, so don't worry. You won't have to worry. But they then have said in the evidence, by the way, if it did, we have sufficient rules in the plan to deal with the boundary between a local shopping centre and residential. And those rules are sufficient for this area we propose. Now, I'm telling you that by way of background, say that the people that I represent, the trust, have been talking to those owners and have we're supposed to have BOR, I'm supposed to be able to tell you today, there's a deal being reached, which kind of gives them what they want. It's not been dealt with by me, it's been dealt with by the lawyers, and the paperwork hasn't been completed. I can't say there is a deal right today, but I expect to be able to inform you, or someone would inform you, that there is a deal. It would mean that we would go from having 2.7 hectares available, we'd possibly lose a bit, but it's minuscule, so don't worry about the size of the amount that would be lost, and the area is a bit of an irrelevance. But I leave you with a problem, because I'm not calling evidence about it. Either there will be a deal done and you won't have to resolve it, or you'll be stuck with a position where certain people want a boundary setbacks and the council is saying that that's not appropriate.
On the other hand, the neighbours have sufficient confidence that they haven't appeared in support of the pre-sexual evidence. So in fact we have no evidence in either direction to rely on.
Yes, well I think, can I say, I don't want to spend my time today dealing with it because I've got a bigger problem, which is more fundamental for your community moving forward. It's the size of the local shopping centre and what might happen with people's capacity to access commercial areas in the general vicinity. So I'm going to leave that aside and hope I solve it by just simply getting someone to write your notes on here so we can agree and here's a copy of the agreement.
Thank you.
Now, can I do it this way, with your permission? Can I call John Polkinghorne to talk to you with his reduced summary report first? Because although we haven't got Mr. Heath here, and because of the way it's been run, he can't just be available every time there's someone wants to talk about these things. It's not here, but that's the way these things run. He'll explain in summary what the difference is between he and Mr. Heath and why he thinks Mr. Heath is wrong and he's right. Then I want to follow that, if I may, with just some legal points, very briefly about how we went from 2.7 to 0.7 and some of those rules that have come in. We don't think that will definitely take an hour, but it depends on the amount of the question you have. And then I'll slot in a slightly unusual way, because it's a different topic, I'll slot Mr. White in, and he can talk to you about that completely different issue, which is some residential land which everyone's agreed should be medium density.
Happy to figure a range of cases, however, since we're nothing if not flexible in this operation.
Thank you.
So if you want to call Mr. Pockingham first and deal with, in effect, the shopping centre as a discrete whole, and as I was to close your case on that point before moving to the second point, that's fine.
Yeah, thank you very much, Sue. Right, now, you have to forgive me, my first time appearing before you.
Last point, the other aspect of flexible, why we understand the council prefer to stand. We're happy if you sit, if you would feel more comfortable, so long as Mr. Pockingham relocates the microphone so he is captured for posterity.
He can take my place.
That's fine.
Good morning all. Am I audible for posterity? A bit louder? A bit closer?
All right.
Okay. Good morning. My name is John Daniel Polkinghorne. I'm an economist from Auckland. A particular specialty in retail and in population growth. And I prepared two previous statements of evidence on this particular piece of land. I assume those are both available to the commissioners. The more detailed one was dated 18 November 2016, in which I ran through an analysis of the retail market in Wanaka. And the second statement, the 4th of April, was briefer. That provided a few updates, comments on other evidence and so on.
Well, can we discuss the first point, because the you filed the first or the first not personally, but the first brief of evidence was filed in a different stream. The way we are running the hearings is that this team have we only have the evidence before us that was filed on the stream, unless it's been specifically in effect duplicated as an appendix. So the answer to your question is, don't assume that we have before us or have read or understood the contents of your previous November brief, because speaking personally, I may have been vaguely aware that you've given evidence in the early stream, but I have not seen your evidence. I have not read it. There's a shake of head from alongside me. So the message is, don't assume we understand what's in your November brief of evidence. If you want to table it so that we consider it, we can handle that. But as in terms of our understanding of what you're saying, if it's derived solely from that November brief, then assume we know nothing about it.
Okay.
Well, can I interject and say, I think we really do have to table it for your benefit.
That we can organise it to be carried over. I don't think you need a physical transfer of paper.
Yes.
Like, I'm happy that if Mr. Poppington says that he wants to rely on this brief of evidence, we can secure the fact that it is, in effect, transferred from the, I think probably the business zone stream, to this one, or duplicated for that purpose. But my concern is that everything he says about it is news to us, and he appreciates that. So we can handle the internal transfer if that's the intention.
In that case, perhaps I might be best to give a very quick overview of what that first statement was about, and it will be, I assume, available to you all to read in full. After today?
Our website will cover it.
Do you want me to give you a copy of it?
I've got it. Okay, I have here a copy of it, and I'll just explain essentially what my process was and how I reached the conclusions that I have. So, the last major analysis that was done on the Wanaka retail market, as far as I'm aware, was during the plan change process for three parks back in around 2009, so almost a decade ago now. Wanaka has, of course, grown substantially in that time, probably towards the high end of what projections would have indicated. And there's also been very substantial growth in tourism. In particular, there was a major increase in international tourism since about 2014. It's probably lifted in the order of 40% in the 2 years subsequent to that.
Was that 40 or 14?
Sorry?
40 or 14?
40. It was very substantial across New Zealand. And so the kind of modelling work that we typically do for tourism is to take current levels of spend and then project that out into the future at a growth rate of 2, 3, 4% per annum, something like that. Which is really the best you can do with tourism, because it's prone to ups and downs and swings and the strength of the dollar and economic conditions and any manner of other factors. But essentially the growth from 2014 to the present was very strong, as I say, of the order of 40%. And so modelling at a growth rate of, 3 or 4% per annum, that's equivalent to something like a decade's worth of growth. So you've got this new higher baseline, which earlier modelling work in 2009, say, would not have considered. Household growth, on the other hand, is a bit more predictable, a little bit more stable. It dips or rises from year to year, but generally you've got a more consistent rate of growth. And as I say, my November evidence goes through the various projections that are available for households and also shows a range of sensitivities for tourism growth. And I do modelling around all of those scenarios in terms of the demand for floor space, retail floor space, that is created as a result. And a couple of figures from that modelling work are shown in the summary of evidence that has been circulated this morning. For example, point 3.5 of that summary, I've estimated demand of 50,000 square metres of floor space in 2016, growing to 70,000 in 2028. And based on a survey of the retail floor space supply in Wanaka from some years ago, we had estimated that there was about 20,000 square metres in the town centre and Anderson Heights combined. Free Parks is able to add 10,000 square metres as a permitted activity, and Cokeskin could expand well beyond that as well. And then there's a couple of hardware stores and the like around the fringes of the town, which would also be considered retail space. So, essentially the approach I took was to take a step back and consider the overall Wanaka retail market. This was an exercise that had been done before, but not for some time. So back in 2009, Free Parks, there were at least three different economic experts, including John Long from RCG, who's a colleague of mine, and I had assisted him with the preparation of that evidence and the modelling work. But it was also Tim Heath and I believe Doug Fairgrey as well. And that process was done of getting all the experts together, conferencing, and ultimately reaching an agreed solution on Three Parks. But that evidence, that modelling and conferencing was now quite dated. So the approach I took, knowing that was quite dated, was to repeat the analysis myself afresh, and again showing that there's very strong growth for Wanaka, probably higher than would have been forecast back in 2009. The models used by myself and by Mr. Heath and others are generally quite similar in how they work and how they predict demand growth. The major difference between myself and Mr. Heath on this was that I consider the entire Wanaka retail market, essentially the entire catchment, if you will, so that's what has been done in the past, and what I did was to split the Queenstown Lakes District into two catchments, one of which being Queenstown, the other being Wanaka. So the Wanaka one includes the area around Wanaka, Alberttown, Hawea, and Queenstown includes everything else essentially. Mr. Heath did do a modelling exercise for his evidence, but that was much more limited in scope. It considered only a very small part of southern Wanaka, most of which is undeveloped for the time being, but which is zoned and likely to accommodate a lot of future growth. And he also didn't consider tourism, which I think is an important omission, because tourism is a major factor in the retail market in Wanaka and of course in Queenstown. So my modelling did consider the entirety of the Wanaka market. It hasn't been challenged by Mr. Heath as such, and nor has he repeated his own analysis. If he had, I would expect that he would reach broadly similar conclusions on the extent of growth over the next 10, 15, 20 years. But I think that having undertaken that analysis of the wider market puts me in a better position to consider the factors around what retail should be provided for in the future. As noted in my summary, I did consider a range of sensitivities around my modelling, different household projections, different tourism growth scenarios, and I deliberately chose projections and scenarios which I considered to be conservative on the whole. I think that's an appropriate approach to take because it's essentially giving an upper limit of potential economic impacts on existing centres and so on. So, my modelling was a starting point for my decision that I've come to, and that was essentially the starting point for me. So the PDP is notified. I was familiar with the provisions, the objectives, policies and rules there, and having considered the PDP provisions, and even in my first statement of evidence, some preliminary evidence from Mr. Heath, I did consider that some extra restrictions on the zone would be perhaps desirable and that I was happy to support. And that included, for example, tenancy caps and restrictions on some kinds of store being able to locate there. I know Mr. Hardy will comment on whether there's jurisdiction for those things, but I assume that there is, and they're all perfectly in scope, so I've given an opinion on that assumption. The Wanaka Town Centre is obviously a very strong centre with particular appeal to the tourism market. It's got great natural amenity. It's got a very high quality of retail environment. And free parks, while not yet developed, forms part of the existing environment for the future. And at least in its first stages, that would be a large format oriented centre, able to expand 10,000 square metres as of right, with large tenancies of more than 400 square metres. So free parks has been confirmed essentially as the major location for large format retail growth. And I've argued that that could mean tenancy caps on the Cardone Valley Road site are desirable. But I believe that it should be set at 400 square metres, not at 300. I note in particular that in that 300 to 400 square metre size range, Mr. Heath's evidence refers to not many convenience retailers being of that size, which I agree with. However, there are a number of tenancies and retailers that would locate in such sized space, and which could be seen as a desirable use of the zone, in my view. Those would include potentially larger restaurants, something like the Lone Star could easily be 300 to 400 square metres. I think another key use would be recreational goods, which would include things like bikes and skis and similar gear. Given that the site is on the major road to Queenstown and to the ski fields, Cardrona also being used as a mountain bike park the rest of the year, I think that's a very logical use to have on the site, and those tenancies could easily be 300 to 400 square metres. I think the outside sport in the town centre must be larger than that. So I would see those kinds of uses as being very likely to want space of that size and desirable for the site. I note that neither Mr. Heath nor myself has advocated restricting the ability of recreational goods retailers in those premises. Whereas, for example, we both thought that appliance and electrical stores should not be locating there because they should be going in free parks, and similarly department stores. But recreational goods stores don't pose a problem there. So I think from the get-go, having tenancy caps set at 400 rather than 300 is a natural place to set it. And I've also argued in one or both of my statements that if a cap of 300 was adopted, then that would leave retailers of 300 to 400 square metres unable to locate either here or at Three Parks. So they would be stuck with the town centre. Retailers in that size range tend to need lower occupancy costs, large format space, lower rent per square metre, and there are lower intensity land use, which I would argue is not the way the town centre should evolve. So I'm essentially running through here in a non-linear way part 4 of my summary of evidence and part 6 as well. Part 4 is mainly looking at the overall retail size. I stated in both my statements of evidence that I support the originally notified area of 2.7 hectares. I consider that the total area of retail there is likely to be somewhat reduced from what you might think compared to a figure of 2.7 hectares because of things such as a likely arterial road running through the site, potential negotiations with the neighbours on the southern fringe, and also lower intensity uses such as potentially a petrol station. Again, I would see that as a very probable use for the site, being on a major road out of town, and with only two petrol stations in Wanaka, both of which, well, two major brand new petrol stations in Wanaka, both of which charge rather extortionate prices. I noticed when I was on a road trip from Nelson down the west coast to Wanaka over summer, I actually paid a lower price at the Fox Glacier petrol station than I did in Wanaka, which surprised me.
You should clearly go to Ballantyne Road.
I wasn't familiar with that one at the time, but apparently that's where the locals go.
You have its signs from the entrance to town. It's from available Ballantyne Road.
Now keep it quiet.
So, regardless, the idea of having a petrol station on the major road out of town with a good, however many kilometres between here and Queenstown, seems to be a pretty logical use for that site. And petrol stations could use something of the order of 4,000 square metres of land, 0.4 of a hectare. And the only retail GFA would be the shop, which might be 100 square metres, maybe a little larger. So these other uses for the site, as well as non-retail uses, non-office, which would include potentially accommodation on upper floors and so on, they would all act to reduce the available area for retail space. I'm now going to try and go through section 6 of my summary, hopefully in a slightly more linear fashion. The original notified TDP objectives, policies and rules was what my initial statement of evidence was based on. Some additional policies were introduced by Ms. Babias in her section 42A report, and I've numbered those there in 6.1. I should note as well that in point 6.3 below, I've referred to a rule X, which sounds a little bit suspect as to whether that's a conspiracy. I'll leave you to decide, but the reference is supposed to be to rule 15.5.10. I apologise for the error. So I'm referring to rule 15.5.10 there in Ms. Weiss's appendix update of planning rules. So of those three additional policies which she suggests, I don't have any problem with 15.2.1.5. I do consider number 4 to be problematic, the one which talks about retail tenancies beyond 300 square metres, office tenancies beyond 200 square metres. and that's essentially building the idea of quite strict tenancy caps into not just the rules but the policies for the zone. If you look closely at the policy, that's not quite what they actually say. It actually says that tenancies larger than that are forced to consider several additional factors which they've got as points A, B and C. And I don't actually take issue with any of points A, B or C, but I don't think that the tenancy cap should be incorporated into that equation. I don't think that the larger tenancies are necessarily likely to, are more likely to have those effects than any others. I think that can be best addressed through rules if there is a desire to control that. So that's policy 15.2.1.4, and it's saying that larger tenancies should not affect the retention and establishment of a mix of activities in the local shopping centre, or the role and function of town centres and commercial zones, or the safe and efficient operation of the transport network. As stated, I don't have any problem with points A, B or C, but they could equally apply to all retail. I'm happy with the proposed policy 15.2.1.5, which calls to restrict identified retail activities to ensure that the role and function of town centres is not threatened. I do think it's important to maintain the primacy of the town centres, no issue there. And in terms of specific identified retail activities, that's talking about certain types of store, such as department stores, electronic stores and so on, which Mr. Heath and myself agree that should be located ideally within three parks of the town centre, more probably three parks. Looking at proposed policy 15.2.1.6, again I agree that the commercial function of the town centre and three parks should not be adversely affected by the Cardrona Valley Road site, but based on the modelling work and the other analysis that I've done and the strong growth outlook for Wanaka, I am highly confident that even the PEP as notified, the Cardrona Valley Road zone would not affect the commercial function of the other two centres, both of which are actually much larger. In that case, the town centre has superb natural advantages, a much wider mix of uses. In the case of three parks, beyond its large format retail capacity, there's also likely to include a mix of other uses, such as accommodation and potentially any other uses down the track. I think there's already the recreational facility open. Point 6.4 of my summary is also an important one, if I can refer to that quickly. I stated that I support the notion of retail tenancy caps at 400 square metres generally. I do recommend allowance for two larger tenancies on the Cardrona Valley Road site, and I put those at 1,500 square metres and 750 square metres. The larger of the two I would see as being suitable for a small supermarket, and I would consider that that is a likely and desirable use for Wanaka going forward. Currently Wanaka only has the one small supermarket, three parks is likely to accommodate a much larger supermarket in the future. That could easily be 3,000, 4,000 square metres. Even considering those two, my modelling work suggests that there will be demand for quite a lot of additional supermarket space beyond that. So I think allowing for a supermarket here on this site is a desirable use. The smaller of those two tenancies, I'm not proposing that that be restricted to a particular use, but I see a likely use for it as being a recreational goods store. It seems like that point is missing a full stop somewhere, but moving on from retail to office, I state that I do not support office tenancy caps. I do not consider those necessary. Finally, section 7 of my summary simply reiterates my previous conclusions, which are to say retail tenancy caps generally at 400 square metres could be desirable. I've suggested two larger tenancies being permitted. Office tenancies should not be capped, but if they are, that should be set at 400 square metres to match the retail. I note that the town centre is full, with limited ability to expand. Three parks, in its initial stages, have limited ability to provide for retailers below 400 square metres. I do support a small supermarket in the local shopping centre zone. I consider this to be consistent with the centres-based approach of the PDP. It will not undermine the town centre's role, and it will address a long-term undersupply which will arise even if three parks does include a large supermarket. My suggested rules will continue to promote the Wanaka Town Centre as the preeminent centre in the area, and three parks as the primary destination for LFR, large format retail, while providing for locally oriented growth within the catchment. They will not undermine the function of these larger centres. And that concludes my summary. Very happy to talk to any of the points I've raised.
Question, initial question for me, Professor. You have a difference of opinion about the translation of total site area to gross floor area to heat.
Absolutely.
Can you give a, you've picked out the areas you're saying. He's assuming 42.9%. You say 30 to 35 is more typical.
Mm-hmm.
Can you give us some examples of the latter that we might, between the panel, the various members of the panel, we might be familiar with of a shopping centre within the 30 to 35% gross floor area?
So that would be very typical in terms of centres which provide for their own parking on site. Most large format retail centres, for example, would sit very squarely between 30 to 35%. Mr. Heath has suggested that an efficiently developed centre could have as high as 45% site coverage, which is certainly the case. I would expect that many of those would be neighbourhood strip shops that might have angle parking in the upper front, but rely in part on street parking available nearby. And I would think he is also thinking of your typical rectangular site, which can be efficiently developed with a roughly rectangular retail building. In this case, the 2.7 hectare site is very irregularly shaped. It's got a number of awkward corners, and I would certainly expect that site coverage would be lower, simply arising from the fact that it would probably be providing all its own parking and the irregular shape of the site. On examples.
Thank you.
In terms of local centres, I haven't done any measurements. There would be a wide range of shopping centres across the country that would fall within that range. As a typical indication, for example, most major shopping centres would have around one car park per 20 square metres of retail space, and a car park would usually take up about 30 square metres of space by the time you allow for circulation and the like. So straight away from that you have 30 square metres of car parking to 20 square metres of retail, so that's 40%, which is somewhere in between yourself and Mr. Heath. In terms of local shopping centres, in particular somewhere like Wanaka in Queenstown, where you have quite peaky demand, in the sense that you've got very busy summer peak tourist periods, when you're likely to have much higher parking requirements than the rest of the year, you don't have those. Even driving through yesterday, for example, I noticed a cafe on the end of town, a little way beyond the Gordon's site. It's got a small cafe with an area of gravel car park, and then people are still parking on the grass beyond that. So in terms of the way that piece of land is actually used, the site coverage would be certainly well below 30%, I would guess.
And the second point, very general point, it seems like, as you've observed, you and Mr. Heath are operating like ships in the night. You've got one assumption on the size of the catchment. He's got a different one. The question that occurs to me, and it may affect the planning question, if you were assuming an entire catchment demand, is that necessarily inconsistent with the concept of a local shopping centre? Another way to put it might be, have you got the wrong relief? Wrong zone.
I think that, well, in terms of, I mean, if there is no other zone essentially, there's the town centre, there's the three parks, and there's this one. And for example, the local shopping centre, I know that it's also doing a similar job over in, I forget the name, Hanson Road, I believe, in Frankton. So that's another case where you've got larger local shopping centre zone being applied there. And in that case, I believe the rules say something around, or the proposed rules say something around a cap of 4,000 square metres of retail plus 3,000 square metres of office. So again, that the zone, while it could apply to your neighbourhood local shops, can also apply to a larger piece of land, as it does both here and over in Frankton. I think that, considering the overall Wanaka retail market, is the best place to start. These shops and these centres still all operate within the same market. The Cardrona Valley Road site in particular is on a major arterial out of town. It's surrounded by other commercial or higher intensity activity. It's got a motel across the road, a retirement village. Infinity own the motel property and the Clip and Climb and the cinema and the former Lone Star across the road. There's an establishment of uses there, including another site. Well, not established, but a future site owned by the Gordons around the corner, which would be a likely hotel. So that's the very local position. In terms of the zone, I consider that it does take into account a wider catchment in terms of looking at people in transit, which I think is partly a clunky way of referring to visitors and tourists. And also just people driving along the road, because it's a major arterial, the main route to Queenstown. So there's those different customer groups there. There's the tourists, the locals, and people driving by, who of course would be either locals or visitors.
When you say a site owned by Gordon's around the corner for a hotel, where are we talking about?
That is, Duncan would be better able to comment, but it is about two properties more that's on the other side of the retirement village.
So and I believe we're talking about the MDR area.
Yes.
That you'll see. Thank you. Mr. Munro.
While you were reading a summary, I've read the evidence you gave in November, so well, I'm held to a strong witness. One of the things that's on my mind is that we are not just limited to picking a winner for the crew between you and she.
Mm-hmm.
Following on from Chair's question, I think there is a very real live option for us to consider, which might be to completely agree with all the analysis you've undertaken, but say we struggle to see how the provisions of the zone in terms of its objectives and policies, which don't talk about visitors and don't talk about tourists and don't talk about wider retail needs, they talk about local community only, isn't the right fit. And it might be that we say council go away and try harder and think of something different. And I think that the relief sought from your comment doesn't go as far as changing the purpose and policies of the zone so as to fit whatever retail you've identified as most appropriate is the correct solution. So in that respect, what I want to ask you questions regarding are the extent to which the outcomes you think might be shoehorned or shoehornable into the actual provisions we're obliged to start with. The objective 15.2.1. I'm just looking at what was notified, because in fairness to you, the council put a bunch of ideas, and Mr. Hardy suggested not all of it might be above board. So do you have those notified?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. So I'm looking at objective 15.2.1. And so the first thing, and it hasn't actually changed in all the other versions of it anyway, but of interest to me is it says enable a range of activities ... that are of a limited scale. And I did struggle to think how a 4,000 metre service station could qualify as being of a limited scale. I think that's a pretty decent sized activity in anyone's book.
Well, in terms of the land area, yes, it's large. I would still consider that to be a limited scale activity. The specific factors around the petrol station are usually addressed since it's via having its own activity classification around things like drive-through and safety and site contamination and those kinds of things. In terms of the retail activity, it's fairly clear-cut. It's got a small store that sells chocolate bars and various other non-healthy products, and people fill up their cars.
Do you agree, though, that by using the word activity rather than retail activity or buildings, we would have to consider whatever small shop was there, the forecourt, the tanks, the 40,000 litre storage tank underneath, whatever associated workshop or car wash, we'd have to consider the whole activity, wouldn't we?
Yes. So service stations, economic consultants such as myself, and I think in fairness Mr. Heath as well, would normally consider those to be not a retail activity that causes any issues in terms of impacts on town centres and so on.
Yeah, but that's not the question I'm asking you. No. I understand very clearly your analysis about how what you think is appropriate wouldn't harm the two centres.
Right.
I'm focused on whether or not what you're seeking can be supported by the zone that's been proposed.
Mm.
Two separate issues.
Okay, sorry, I'll try to...
That's okay. I can't expect you to be the planning nerd the planner would be.
Yeah, sorry. So I took the objectives and policies as they found them. I haven't proposed changes, and I don't think anyone else has either.
So anyway, to sum up what you said, you think, say, a 4,000 metre site area service station, in your view anyway, could be argued as being a limited scale activity. Good. Because that's the test. The objective says limited scale. That was the question.
Yeah, I don't really think it's an economic question. I certainly don't have
Related to it, I suppose, is this question of the needs of the community and the local community.
Mm.
Interestingly, for your argument, the objective doesn't say local community, it says just community,
mm.
Which might actually support a Wanaka-wide analysis in the first instance. But if we go to the policies, they do start then talking about local community. And so again, for something like a service station, what would, in your view, be the kind of, if you can answer, the proportional split of customers, locals, tourists?
What I can say is that overall, the Wanaka retail market, about two-thirds of the spending comes from tourists, so that's very highly slanted towards tourists. In terms of the petrol station, it's probably back towards 50-50. Certainly, if you live in Wanaka, then you would travel quite high distances as a matter of course. People who live in smaller towns and rural areas, remote areas, tend to do a lot of driving. But so, could I perhaps just go back to the objectives and policies? I took them as I found them. I don't consider them to be perhaps perfectly worded. I think they sound to me as if they could have been lifted from almost any other district or city and just dropped in here without really considering the Queenstown Lakes context, which in my mind includes very high population growth, but more specifically also includes a very strong tourism component. And the Queenstown Lakes District Council, for example, does estimates of the people in the towns on an average day throughout the year, and tourists probably make up, I'm not sure what the percentage is, but on any given day tourists would make up a very significant proportion of the people in the town, so that they are always making tourists. I think you could consider tourists while they're here to be part of the local community, notwithstanding that the phrase local community is probably more applicable to a small town that's out of the way somewhere that doesn't rely strongly on tourist activity. But even so, any small town that you could think of would tend to be on a highway, and you've got a retail strip along the highway, and they would often rely on passing traffic, which is still considered tourism. Again, specifically for Wanaka, in addition to the tourists who come down and stay in commercial accommodation stay, which they're obviously a great deal, including around the subject sites, and there's a motel across the road, there's a hotel just down the road, and there's likely to be further accommodation development in the future. So even in that very local area, there's a strong accommodation component. In addition to that, something like 30% of the homes through Wanaka are not used as full-time residences, they're holiday homes. So the people who come down to there, however often they come down, are also considered to be tourists from that perspective.
Right. So let's fast forward to the conclusion that effectively what you're saying possibly supports a recommendation from us that council, you've got it wrong. Maybe it needs to either change what it's saying a local shopping centre zone is, or create a different category of local shopping centre zone to distinguish between those that might be just about a local shop for local residents and those that might be more about locals and tourists, as you've described. Would that be a fair summary of where you're sort of going?
It might justify a different zone on the basis of its different position and location requirements and ability to satisfy growth demands, but I don't think that there would be any local shopping centre anywhere in the district that doesn't attract a strong proportion of tourism activity. They're woven into the fabric of the district everywhere you go.
I'll give you an example. There's a supermarket on Adamson Drive in Arrowtown. I'm not sure you'd call it a shopping centre, but that has the appearance to me of something that is purely serving the local residents. Like, as we discussed about the Valentine Road service station, most of the tourists would never know it was there. that a counterpoint to illustrate the point you're making that a local shopping centre might be out of the way, out of sight, out of view of the tourists, whereas something that's on a main tourist arterial is clearly firmly in view of the passing tourists and would likely seek to attract those passing tourists?
That's probably a fair point. I'm not familiar with that particular site, but I'm thinking now about Anderson Heights.
I rest my case, but you are familiar with it.
Okay.
I can't talk about it if you're familiar with it.
Perhaps I'll say most rather than all.
Yes, very good. Yeah. So on that same theme then, and picking up the idea of a supermarket itself, given that's a specific thing you've identified, likewise, I'm interested in understanding what limited scale might mean in the context of floor space.
Mm. So I would consider 1,500 square metres to be a small supermarket. That would probably be a little bit smaller than the existing one in town centre, which I understand trades its socks off, and there are probably times of the day and of the year when locals stay away from it because it's so crowded and packed.
Mm-hmm.
And,
right about a month.
Sorry?
Right about a month.
Yeah.
Just
go on a
diet for a month.
Yeah, so I would consider that to be small scale within the context of the Wanaka growth community.
One of the great urban myths pre-Christchurch quake was that shopping malls had been so successful in ring-fencing the arterials into the main CBD that they soaked up all the action of people coming and going. The CBD retail environment itself started to suffer.
In Christchurch.
And so, picking up that theory, if there's a supermarket of three parts on one way in, and there's a supermarket on Kardrona Bay Road on the other way in, that's just a little bit smaller than the one that is in the CBD, as you just said. At what point does the one in the CBD start to suffer?
I think with Christchurch, that's probably a fair point, and the CBD probably pre-earthquakes had been a issue that was going on. In Wanaka in Queenstown.
It's
very different because there's that incredibly strong concentration of tourism activity, which is the main driver of retail activity. So in the town centre, most of the shops in the town centre are expecting most of their business to tourists. And in terms of locals shopping at supermarkets in three parts intentionally here, that probably is the case. That probably takes a bit of pressure off the existing supermarket and enables redevelopment within the town centre to even more successfully capitalise on the tourist market. So I guess the outcome of that is I can't see any way that the town centre would struggle.
We've been told by other witnesses that there's lots of capacity in the Wanaka Town Centre. Your view is that it's full?
It's full based on existing developments. It's already reasonably intensively developed in a lot of places from a retail point of view. You've got upper floor retail, which is very rare in New Zealand. You've got I suppose you could say that the main strip would be the north-south road, and then you've got the food and beverage as well. But just about every face of every block within the town centre is quite highly developed. Sure, redevelopment could occur, and I would expect it would occur in the long term. But that might not necessarily give big increases to the retail space, because there's already quite a substantial retail offering, and there are alternative land uses which might also locate within an intensified town centre, such as a lot more accommodation.
If you had not undertaken a Wanaka-wide analysis, but had undertaken a more localised analysis, as Mr. Heath did, do you think your conclusions might have been closer to where he got to? Or is it significantly more to the difference than the size of the study area in the catchment?
Well, I think for starters, excluding tourism was something that, that shouldn't have been done.
No, I'm not asking you whether you got it wrong. You've already said you got it wrong. I'm asking if you had followed a similar methodology in terms of study area and capture that he did, would your own separate analysis have led to a similar position that he got to?
Our models are similar, so if we had used the same catchment and the same approach, we would have reached similar results on that.
Okay, thank you.
I would perhaps have been unable to comment on the wider Wanaka retail market dynamics and the ability to grow within that catchment because of that.
Interested. I can understand something like a service station and a supermarket. I'd love you to pin the tail on the donkey of the second 750-metre tent. What do you have in mind there, or do you just have a funny idea that some random thing that big would come along?
I think that would be very strongly in the recreational goods camp.
Okay.
I've agreed with Mr. Heath that a lot of the tenancies that might go in a 750-square-metre store should be restricted. But I think for recreational goods, there's a very strong possibility. The outside sport, for example, those kinds of tenancies are probably in that sort of range. And having those kinds of locations on the way out, on the way to Queenstown, Kikorino, etc., I view as being desirable. That could potentially let space in the town centre ultimately intensify. You could chop up some of those larger tenancies and therefore get smaller, more productive, more high value space out of it.
I'm interested in the various iterations of gross space and net space. And so the council's current position is a 1 hectare gross space that might lose 3,000 metres of road and be 7,000 net development sites. Surely a 2.7 hectare site would have some form of road going into it or through it.
Absolutely.
And so if we were to try and compare an apple with apple and say it's either 1 hectare versus 2.7, or it's 0.7 hectare versus a discount based on...
That's probably, as you say, the council's talking about 1 hectare gross, so 0.7 net, say, and with the entire 2.7, you've still got the road, and you've perhaps got some loss of land on the southern fringe in terms of developable, usable land. So that might be 0.7 versus 2. In the low twos.
Yeah. Okay. Look, I think I appreciate it's without an actual plan. Who knows what it might be, but I appreciate you giving me that. I've got no other questions. Thank you.
Commissioner Hudson.
Commissioner Monroe has asked some of the questions that I have much more eloquently and much more logically, but what I would like to understand from you, Mr. Tulkinghorn, is whether the location of this floor space is, in your mind, critical. Does the demand that you say exists need to be met here? Or if you're talking about a supermarket, should that small size supermarket be somewhere else, for example, in Albertown or Harrier?
So I consider this site as better placed than either of those two to accommodate that kind of demand. Albertown and Harlea are both much smaller villages, I suppose, within the wider Wanaka area. They've also got a lot less accommodation and tourism activity, I would think. The likely food retailing demand in either of those places, extrapolating for future growth and so on, might be something along the lines of a 4 square or that kind of 300, 400, 500 square metre. I don't think a small supermarket would be viable in those locations.
In relation to the 750 square metre footprint store that you were talking about, how would something like a Rebel Sport compare to size with a 750?
Rebels can be much larger. They could be, I think their smallest one in the country is probably on the order of 700 square metres, give or take a bit, and they could be up to 2,000 square metres.
Okay.
pretty much a city's general.
Do you, from your experience, do outdoor recreation stores want to locate in close proximity to each other, or are they perfectly able to stand alone and function appropriately in the sort of setting that you're talking about, like Scoopers being in the three park development, for example?
That's a good question, and it's a little tricky for me to answer. They historically, there's only really been Rebel Sport as the absolute strongest recreational goods retailer, but you could also look at ones like Black Shops, of which there's been a number of brands over the years, Sterling Sports, which tends to be smaller. There's also Kathmandu and other ones like that, which are probably slightly more in the clothing area, but could also be argued to be recreational goods. They've certainly been happy to co-locate where the spaces and the formats fit their needs. And in practice, that they may end up in different places because Rebel Sport may be in one centre and Kathmandu may be in another. But they certainly will co-locate.
Mm. You were talking about the town centre being full, and I was wondering if you sort of did start to touch on displacement and redevelopment of retail space. And I wondered whether that's something you had given a lot of thought to, or whether it was just based on a general observation. Is it part of the analysis and modelling that you've done?
It's not. The modelling I did was around demand, so it's a it's a theoretical equation based on the number of households and tourists and the growth in those categories and typical spending patterns by households and tourists. So I know that doesn't specifically consider redevelopment. That would fall into the supply side. We did a survey, which I've alluded to in my evidence, that was actually done back in 2007 by my colleague John Long. And I don't think it's changed dramatically since then, except for this building behind us with the space. Town centre redevelopment is certainly something that would occur in fast-growing and well-regarded commercial locations. It's something that's starting to happen in parts of Auckland. I can think of Mission Bay as being an example. It's something that happens when the kind of the intensity and the type of use that is originally developed changes down the track. You've still got the embedded value of the building, but over time you allow the building to run down, perhaps, because you know that you're going to redevelop to something bigger. It's something that occurs in well-regarded and high-growth town centres. You could look at smaller towns in New Zealand which don't have growth and don't have tourism, and town centres can often stagnate in those cases. Here I think you've got obviously very strong growth, very strong tourism, and really a situation that has changed in the last, the size of the market has grown so much in the last decade, whereas the retail offering has not changed that much. So there's absolutely demand and likelihood that the town centre would intensify and redevelop over time. It can be a slow process.
Yeah, it may not be typical, but from observation, there is a car sales yard, for example, sitting out on Brownston Road, and I would have expected that if there was higher retail demand, that sites like that would get redeveloped sooner rather than later. Is that a fair assumption?
Yep, absolutely. Although sooner rather than later, the leases, things like car yards can often be viewed as a form of land banking. It's an activity you do in the meantime, and you're going to develop it in the long term, and maybe you develop it now, or maybe you develop it in 5 years' time because the demand will be that much stronger, and you might have more flexible planning provisions in 5 years' time that you're looking forward to, things like that. Car yards have definitely been redeveloped and intensified. Again, apologies for the Auckland examples, but that's where I'm from. The car yards, which were traditionally located along places like Great North Road and Great Lynn, are now being redeveloped for apartment buildings. And I know one in Wellington on Taranaki Street, so that's another one of those arterials down the CBD, that's been sold as well and is likely to be rebuilt for apartments. So, yeah, the idea of car yards, which are essentially land and perhaps a very basic building, they would absolutely be redevelopment candidates in the medium to long term.
Thank you. I don't have any other questions.
Question of power.
Thank you. Firstly, God bless you for calling Auckland a well-regarded location. Of that.
Well-regarded or growing, I believe.
Yeah, I lived there for 2 years. Great city. The one question that seems to sit, and for me it's a recurring theme, is Mr. Hardy said that one of the issues is not looking out far enough. And I think it was Bill Gates that said, people always overestimate what will happen in the next 2 years and underestimate what will happen in the next 20. Do you think you've looked far enough? Do you think?
I think I've looked as far as it's possible to look. The further out you go, the greater the uncertainty. I focused on, my initial evidence actually probably focused on 2023. And then I've taken some of the figures from 2028 instead this time around, which is only 12 years out. My full modelling does take out a further, it goes out as far as Stats New Zealand projections go, which is 2043. I think certainly with the percentage growth that Wanaka and Queenstown are going through, it's very substantial, but I also appreciate that the uncertainty increases the further out you go.
Yeah, and please look at this the wrong way, but I would almost equate economists to volcanologists, at least. It's like it's going to erupt. Look, it's erupting. You know, it's a dark art, you might say.
It is, and that's why I create projections, not forecasts.
Yeah. And it's interesting again, just in terms of local shopping. When I first arrived here, the definition of local was you had to have a relative in a graveyard, whereas next door you've got 60 or 100 ski instructors that are coming down here to Madrona, 50% of whom are actually returning.
Yeah.
And I think the 50% that are returning would consider themselves locals. So it's all locals morphing, you'd have to say. With regard to the area you're talking about in terms of the local shopping centre and having a sporting goods store, for example, I did a bit of a speech just recently, and some of the research would suggest 2030 that 50% of all shopping malls in the States will be closed because of how we approach shopping is radically changing.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think we're still going to require bike shops, ski shops, and is that then necessary for a local shopping mall?
Well, the process of ordering bikes and skis online to a remote location like Wanaka is when you've got tourists coming in all the time. I think that those kinds of shops would always be quite highly in demand. Things like food and beverage as well, that's obviously something that's quite secure. But you're starting to feel the impact in categories like fashion, for example. If anything, the fashion impact at the moment is probably heightened, because I think the market is still going through an adjustment where the fashion landscape has changed and rents have not yet changed to reflect that. So I think a number of the fashion receiverships and so on recently are driven by that landlords have been quite stubborn around the level of rent charge. The US had a higher area of retail space per capita than anywhere else in the world. It was and is a very low density, very space hungry model of retailing, which I don't think we'd want to see here, and we haven't really seen here to that extent. I think looking ahead for New Zealand, I don't think that we'll see the kinds of things that have happened to the US. I can imagine some of the lower forms, lower density forms of retail could be redeveloped for mixed use, certainly in places like Auckland where there's that growth pressure.
Can you write that down in Spanish for me, please?
Sorry.
Can you write that down and sign it for me? I'm playing with that point. One of the things, the themes that goes through some of your evidence is that attracting business away from town centre, Willeridge, from Three Parks, etc., etc. And you quite clearly state that it's not, it's a different function. Because, and some of the arguments you use in terms of the provision of land, you have 5.5 and 5.6 in your evidence about the percentage that's used. Can you expand on that 35 to 30 and the 50%? Because obviously Willeridge is a green field, go for your life, use the space any way you want, and this is tighter. But I just want to be clear in my head the spaces and why you require the extra space. Why you think you need the extra space?
Sorry, I'm just trying to find the reference. Is that 5.5?
It's on the evidence that you gave in April. 4th of April 2017, pardon me. 5.5 and 5.6.
Yes.
So it's the percentage of the site coverage. Mm-hmm. I just want to be clear in my head because there's been a bit of discussion about it.
Yes, I think that if you're talking about single level retail development that provides its own parking, sorry, perhaps I've misunderstood the question slightly, but I think that the 30-35% coverage is the more likely.
Yep. And why do you think that?
That's based on, Mr. Heath has given one figure, which he said is based on his experience, and I'm doing the same based on mine. I also think considering the site required, the shape of the site will also favour a lower figure.
And that's taking into the 30 to 35 is the building that's on the space, taking into account the amount of parking that's around it.
Yes. So that would be the gross floor area of retail as a proportion of the land area.
And that would also, I suggest, include accommodation?
Accommodation would drop that yet again because the accommodation would probably need its own parking, so we'd run above that. So, yes, I would assume that if you have upper level accommodation and you needed at least some car parks for that, then that would reduce you further.
Okay. That's fine, thanks.
Thank you very much, Mr. Parking. Mr. Hardy.
Took me a bit by surprise, all of that, and my watch there as well.
I'm looking at my watch too.
Yeah.
But I think given that Mr. Hoffman's evidence is at the heart of your most important issue, with time well spent, but it does mean you have very little time to balance your case, so can I encourage you to...
Yes. Could you go quickly and just ask if there's any issues about your... I'm going to change it now. So, is there anything... You've got a statement.
I do, but it's only just over a page long. It really just says, I'm happy with the recommendation from the officers. I don't need to make anything more sense than that. I'm happy to answer the questions that you may have.
Well, for the planners are happy, surely we'll be happy, so I've got no questions.
Looking like a food planner.
Since I'm not a planner, one question. You've given a number of reasons for the MDR. You've got on the site. Seemed to me that those reasons would apply to the whole town and the whole residential area should be MDR. What's different about this site that means MDR is better, a more appropriate zoning than low density or even high density?
Let's deal with perhaps the last one first because it's easiest to deal with. I didn't consider the high density was appropriate because the only high density in town is proposed on Lisbon Street. And high density has a much higher height limit than proposed in either the low density or the US jurisdiction.
You don't need to go for that because we don't have scope anyway, but that was rhetorical. But in particular, why is many density more appropriate for this site than low density.
Okay. In this case, you had a significant corner site, and you can make more with a medium density on the corner site than you can low density because of the density mix. It was also well located because it's adjacent or very near to the proposed shopping centre and our facilities, and it's likely to be similar in each of the adjacent than the adjacent to the common village.
Oh, sorry, I'm having trouble hearing.
It's doing a switch.
There was just a little bit of background.
Sorry, we'll shut the door.
The last couple of points I made were that the location is close to the proposed local shopping centre and similar to the adjacent retirement village.
Right, I had a sort of question about that, so maybe I will ask it if he doesn't mind. Could you do an analysis of the density of the retirement village? I'd be interested in knowing just how it does compare.
I can't recall the thing. Yes, we have done a look at the density of it.
I would find it helpful if you were able to provide that.
How long would you need?
We have those figures ready, so I can get those to you this afternoon.
Well, let's say 5 o'clock. 5 o'clock Monday then.
Monday's a holiday.
Oh, that's a good point. All right, 5 o'clock Tuesday.
I'm keeping it.
Monday's a holiday for some.
Yes, probably not for me.
Mr. White, can you just help me get my head around what the NDR zone looks like? I haven't had the opportunity to look at the proposed district plan. So in addition to residential units at 250 square metres. What provision is made for other forms of residential accommodation besides individual residential units?
That's what density does enable row housing and.
Row housing being terraced housing.
Similar styles of residential to that. This zone makes provision for small scale commercial activities. As a discretionary activity, and those are limited to 100 square metres.
100 square metres, yeah. So, in regard to terraced housing or row housing, that's at the 1 to 250 square metre per unit density, and I think Mr. Munro, Commissioner Munro, has already asked you about the provision in the plan under the definition of residential unit for a flat as well, so essentially one residential unit is two potential separate offices. And so there was some reference made earlier to a possible hotel, so how would that fit in terms of the NDR provision?
I was looking at that.
You saw that coming, did you?
I did, and I can see that the site has some advantages for visitor accommodation, except when you come to the provisions.
So when you talk about a hotel, that is, we're talking VA in the general sense?
Yes. Visitor accommodation, not one of the activities listed in the activity table, except in the sense of commercial activities, which over 100 square metres of gross floor area are a non-compliant activity.
What was that trigger, please?
Commercial activities in Wanaka comprising no more than 100 square metres of gross floor area are discretionary activity. Any commercial activities not otherwise identified non-compliant.
And do I understand that there's no discretion on height, that there's a height limit and that's good?
Correct. The maximum height limit is 7 metres. If you exceed that, you become a non-compliant activity.
Thank you.
Thank you.
One little aesthetic question for me. Sorry, this is absolutely unrelated, but on the your evidence, there's an urban analysis, and you don't need to answer it now, but it's an answer in due course to be good. There's a wonderful photo of a town that's on a lakeside.
It's a very spectacular photograph.
Could you find out where that is for me, please, whenever it's good?
Okay, I'll talk to Common Ground.
Thank you.
Just that right in front.
Mr. Hardy. I won't stop you 30 seconds ago. We'll be 10 minutes. We'll have a 5 minute recess
between here. Well, I'll talk then in detail. You see, it was only one page anyway. It wasn't even just some headings. They just notes and things about it. About the LCS, which is the LEC. But I'm just going to pick up on some things, and particularly what Mr. Munro was saying, because I feel in a little difficulty addressing you, because I came in at a point when I wasn't able to deal with the objectives and policies. The problem when I look at what's happened. So I looked at those that are initially there, and the only thing that I think is very fundamental that no one has pointed out to you, if they're not brilliantly drawn, with due respect to whoever did it, is that if you look at the zone purpose, which has not changed, it says the local, first sentence, the local shopping centre zone enables small-scale commercial and business activity in discrete pockets of land that are accessible to residential areas, ego the keywords, and people in transit. And I thought, even though you then go on and say what it says a little bit more by way of the zone purpose, and the objectives when it talks about to meet the day-to-day needs of the community, the fact is that the community you're then talking about in the objective, by giving effect to the zone purpose, the community is not just people who live locally. The community is people who live locally and people in transit. People in transit, excuse me, tourists. So this, when it was initially drawn up by the council, anticipated that it would serve not just the local community, but people who are in transit. And then, of course, it was called a local shopping centre. And it had a range of things that and wording that were a bit inconsistent with that, and Mr. Munro's clearly picked up on that. Now, that was the situation initially that everyone was faced with. No one, someone should have taken umbrage with it. They should have gone back and said, it doesn't fit. That wasn't the real problem here. The real problem occurred when Mr. Dippy, Willow Ridge, decided to put in the submission saying, this looks too big. This will interfere with my planned project. And we all know trade competition, but it's not. If you can show that there might be an interference with another centre, let's not go into the law. That was the problem. The council re-evaluated. And what it then did is it went ahead and changed the policies to really restrict what you could do on this site. And if you give effect to those policies that were introduced, I don't know how it happened, I don't think there's even jurisdiction for it to happen. And I'll tell you this, very quickly, since I haven't got long, size of the zone, I said, yes, there's jurisdiction to consider the size of the zone, because a neighbour came and said, oh, that is too big. Now, really interesting, I put the Willow Ridge submission in front of you, the only page, Willow Ridge never said the size is too big. Well, average on that page I've given you, local shopping centre zone 15.4 said include the rule, 15.4, include rules, not objectives and policies, in 15.4 to restrict retail activities to those providing local services. So I wanted a particular rule to limit the kinds of things you could do. Well, there's been some changes, things have been excluded, but it hasn't been to the extent that Willow Ridge wanted, but Willow Ridge didn't call any evidence or expert evidence about it. And then it said, with gross floor area of no more than 400 square metres, I must admit, rules to a like effect. But out of all of this, the council ended up not putting a rule in. Well, it did a rule about the gross floor area at 3,000 square metres. No one asked for that. It just decided to put it in. No one asked for it. And then what it did is it took the 400 and it reduced it to 300. And not only did it do that, it then included a new rule no one had asked for, out of the blue, limiting development for office space to tenancy areas of 200 square metres. Now, what they've done is they've scarpered any prospect of this fulfilling the needs that were identified by Mr. Polkinghorne. If those objectives and policies, it's not so much the objectives, if they stay the way they are, sorry, I have to be honest and tell you, I have to take this somewhere else if I can't correct them. And I don't know what capacity I have to correct them. But I must say I'm a little comforted by hearing Commissioner Munro say, perhaps reflecting that there's some concern about how the thing was even originally worded compared with what actually is needed. But believe me, if it stays the way that's happened, don't know how it happened. Wasn't there, wish I was involved, wish I could have said something to you earlier, wish I was there, but that's your problem. My evidence, which I think is strong, because fundamentally, this zone called for the provision of services for both travellers and local people. The council's expert witness has completely discounted all of the tourists. He can't do that. His evidence is fundamentally flawed. My evidence, through my expert witness, deals with the issue. Problem, policies now don't allow it. You're constrained.
Thank you for that speedy summary. I want to focus on one point only. Understand your argument about jurisdiction vis-à-vis office space, gross floor area, reduction of 400 tenancy below to 300. So we'll put that to one side. We have legal advice from the council's lawyers that in their opinion, if someone asks for a rule, a policy to give effect to would provide a framework for the rule is a consequential change.
I'll give you a short answer to that. I read the minutes that you as a panel issued to people who were going to appear before you about what objectives, policies and rules mean. Very well done, whoever drafted it. It was good. The problem is, what you do is you frame a high-level objective, we know this, I'm talking to experts, you then have underneath it the policies that give effect to it. So a policy can say, we want to make sure that this does not constrain the development of other important commercial centres. So I've just picked words. And then you put a rule in, which actually is the means by which you're giving effect to the policy. I'm not saying you can't have a policy which is very directive. We've got a terrible one here. It's a void. Uses the words a void in a policy. Well, we all know as lawyers and as planners, that's really put the cat amongst the pigeons. So, yes, I'm not saying that argument is wrong, but it isn't a wise method of dealing with the hierarchical nature of objectives, policies and rules.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Look, I am aware of what the zone purpose says about travellers, and it was of interest to me, and it's an issue I've had across the plan, in that I'm unclear on what statutory weight, if any, the zone purpose statements have. I don't know whether they are set up to be effectively the APEX provision, against which all subsequent objectives, policies and methods are drawn or derived, which I think is the position you've taken, or whether they are in fact more of an advice note that just tries to summarise what the actual provisions say to the lay reader. How did you get to the approach you got there?
Well, I think they operate in a slightly different way, that at the end of the day they inform the objectives and policies. So you draw on the language that's used in the zone pivots and statement to help you in your interpretation of the objectives and policies. And fundamentally here, the key thing is that when you talk about the needs of the community, you are able to go back and determine what the community is and draw on it.
So in conclusion, where the zone purpose talks about travellers and the other provisions don't, that you're saying that's an error in the objectives, policies and methods. It's not someone trying to summarise it in the zone purpose and just getting it wrong.
Oh, that's right. If you could sit down wearing your lawyer's hat and you sit down as a planner wearing your planner's hat, you'd say, now hold on, this could have been done a lot better. It's got some problems, but we face that all the time. But at least I can say, and it's pretty crucial to my argument, that at the end of the day, if you look at this place as entirely for some local community, you're fundamentally wrong, because that's not what the council ever intended. I really buggered it up, frankly, since it first introduced the plan, but it never intended that in the first place.
Yeah, well, I will. I think it's fair to acknowledge, in terms of support of your argument, that the council's evidence consistently identifies things like the high proportion of holiday homeowners in Wanaka, etc. So, look, I've got no other questions.
But I just think, you know, just to give you two examples, you go up there, someone who's already mentioned, big set of motels, obviously. What about Airbnb? Huge in this place. Where do you think all of those tourists are? They're out there in this area. They're there. They're not. Someone says, oh no, there's no tourists out here. This is illogical. That's the point my witness was making.
Any more for any more? Well, on that note, I should thank Mr. Hardy and his team. We'll adjourn for 5 minutes, which is now, so that's quarter to twelve. Yeah. Mr. Todd.
Sorry, Mr. Todd, but I've gone over my allotted time. I hope you'll forgive me.